Well, you know you have a good mystery novel when you really want to keep turning the pages, even though it might be late at night. And it's, I think it's even better when there's humor weaved throughout to keep things light and entertaining. And I think that's what our guest today has done in his new novel, Doc's Codicil, a story of riddles, togetherness, and following your dreams. Dr. Gary Jones practiced bovine medicine in rural Wisconsin for 19 years. Then he returned to school, earned a PhD in microbiology, and worked on research and development of veterinary vaccines from 1993 till his retirement in 2012. Dr. Gary Jones, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for calling.
Appreciate having you along today. And I did enjoy reading your book for sure. And as I looked at your background, and then I looked at the people in the book, I thought, there's a lot there that looks like what Gary Jones, or how Gary Jones lived his life.
Actually, the an awful lot was taken from my life and my family. I have four children, three boys and a girl, and son of a gun. In the book, there are a veterinarian with three boys and a girl. And especially for a beginning writer, having these very clear identities so that they came across as separate people on the page sure helped.
Yeah, I bet it did. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in as you listen. Maybe you're a fan of mysteries. What do you like most about mysteries? Have you had a chance to read Gary's book yet, Doc's Codicil? Do you enjoy problem solving? Well, here's a book with some problems to solve for sure. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page title, of course, The Larry Mueller Show. So we'd certainly love to hear from you. And, you know, it might be great if you could more or less start out by outlining the nature of the story here.
In the story, it actually starts with the death of a Wisconsin veterinarian nicknamed Doc, and the book opens with the reading of his will and the codicil that he has attached to it, and that's where he has added the riddles, and the kids get nothing unless they can satisfy these riddles. It goes then from the kids discovering that their father had written a book, and the take doofus squirrel fishing riddles, they work to get a copy of the book, which has not yet been published, and they meet up with some of their father's old friends, and they find some clues that he's left around. Some deliberately, some by accident. And they work on that, and when they get to the book, when they get part of a copy of the book, it switches then to reading Doc's memoirs. So it's really a book within a book. If anyone has read Sarah's Key or seen the movie, or if you're familiar with Shaw's Man and Superman, which has another play within it, Don Juan in Hell, you get the idea. So it follows Doc through a period, say, from the Thanksgiving before he left practice to his meeting with Doofus, a Christmas with Doofus interfering, and at the same time his sister has gotten her husband tied up in a Christmas nativity headed for disaster.
You can say that again.
Yeah, I really had fun with that.
That had to be a just that story. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, actually, I began writing the book. Let's say that beginning with Doc, I wrote Doc's book first, and that is the nativity that went bad and the character pushing Doc into following his dreams. And I did this when I set out. I was using about 30 years worth of Christmas letters that I had sent out, just detailing the really stupid things that I and my children had gotten ourselves tied up into during the previous year. Not in the book, but as an example, I tried to help my wife clean the kitchen one day. She wasn't there to supervise, and I ended up getting butter stuck in the vacuum cleaner. You know, so if you've got 30 years worth of that stuff to work with, it's easy to write the part with the family. And I also wanted to, let's say I was, well, when I started writing it, I was really disturbed by the political discourse in the country. The way we approached ideas, it just seemed like a lot of crazy ideas were getting currency. And as I wrote the book, I had a chance to look at the ideas that I had followed and those that I hadn't. And it was sort of a revelation for me, and it should not have been, but some of the wackiest ideas I had, the things that I blushed to even admit that I had done, they turned out very, very well. So it's ideas require evaluation, and if you have, you know, if you have dreams, it's nothing but daydreaming until you do something about it.
And that's a message that turns up in your book.
Yes. And also I wanted to sprinkle in a little of the basics of the scientific method. And I realized that I would have to have a lot of humor to keep most people reading through that. It's very light. There's not much, but it's something. Well, then when I was about two-thirds of the way done with Doc's memoir, and I took a class in the University Extension. Mm-hmm. I joke that I found that my book was too short, so I took an extension class. But the instructors there were extraordinarily helpful. And one of the things they told me was, Gary, you've got a wonderful writing voice, but you don't have a plot. And in desperation searching for a plot, I came up with the codicil. Idea of the kids looking at that, and that actually came from an assignment I'd been given on another extension writing course to write a short story about something mundane, something laying around the house, and I happened to be handling an envelope originally made to hold World War II bonds. And I wrote sort of the history of that, but it was a history that I found emotionally difficult to write because the the bonds were for my older brother, and he had drowned before I was born.
Oh.
And it was also a point at which I was nearing the end of my career. And really, I found that what I was doing was trying to find something to do to go forward. And that sort of clicked and came up with the codicil.
Well, it was a good idea.
Yeah, and the characters, there were some that I don't know where I came up with them, but they just sprang off the page. I've had a number of what I think of as very gracious and patient people in my life, and also very firm people, and it was easy to go from there.
Well, I have no idea how you came up with doofus. Where does one come? Not so much a person that dresses and acts that way.
Yeah. The doofus is the I came up with the idea. First of all, if you remember the Jimmy Stewart movie Harvey,
oh, of course,
with the 6-foot invisible rabbit that he's talking to all the time.
Yeah,
and I combined that with my kids had left some fantasy books laying around the house and a. Apparently, when I was bored, I read through a couple of them, and I picked up some ideas there. And since I was trying to come up with a, let's say, the patron fairy of bad ideas, I deliberately made him look as ridiculous as I thought I could.
Well, you sir. It's certainly ridiculous looking.
Yeah, yeah. And what is, as I realized that, also then from Chuck Pierce's Idiot America, the book, he notes that good ideas and bad ideas come from the same place, human imagination. And it's up to us to separate them.
Gary Jones, our guest today, he practiced bovine medicine in rural Wisconsin for 19 years, went back to school, got his PhD in microbiology, worked in research and development from 1993 to 2012, and is the author of the mystery novel we're talking about. The title is Doc's Codicil. You may have a question about writing. You may have a question about the book itself. Or maybe mysteries in general. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Rebecca Haas, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Dr. Gary Jones, a practicing veterinarian for many years, then a research scientist for many years as well. He's written a book called Doc's Codicil. And just if you're tuning in a little late, let me just give you a little note here on what the book's about. It's about a veterinarian, a Wisconsin veterinarian who dies. His family has to solve the codicil he left in his will if they're going to inherit his fortune. And so that's kind of the plot for the book. And the book involves, I would say, about half of the book is the members of his family, the sons and daughter, trying to figure out the codicil, and the other half relates to a book that that Doc wrote before he died, obviously, and so we're getting a chapter from the what's going on with the family members, and then a chapter, more or less, the next chapter might be a chapter from his book, Doc's book. So that's sort of the setup for the book itself, and lots of things happen. This is a mystery, but man, there's some wild things that happen in this book that are pretty funny. Gary, as I was reading the part about the Christmas pageant, I could just imagine that on screen.
Let's say that whole thing comes from a rumor that I heard about a Christmas pageant, obviously in the South, that went bad, or let's say the camels didn't agree with each other. And when I heard that, I just took the rest of it. And again, when you come up with ideas or hear of things that are so silly, it's just a joy to write.
So Doofus, it must have been fun to write about him, I think. So Doofus, Doofus is a fairy, right? And he's
As I said, he was the described him, I believe, as the patron fairy of bad judgment and wishful thinking. But some of the ideas are good. It's just, it's up to the individual to determine which. And people do stupid things, and I'm probably in the forefront on that. I've done, everybody has. I was watching, I had stopped at an intersection a few weeks ago, and I was already stopped, and a pickup came roaring through. Obviously, the driver was thinking of something else, and he hit another car. And, you know, I really felt sorry for the driver, because when it comes to doing foolish things or just, you know, the human race seems to have a handle on it, a real lock on it. I'm not saying it's other people. I'm probably right there. Well, I know darn well I am. So it's easy to write that way.
You know, family is certainly a major theme throughout.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and I think, was the codicil, it seems like it was meant to bring the heirs together.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering why that was important for you to get across.
I think that my family was fairly close, and there are quite a few scenes in there that... they happened. Although, let me say that this is a work of fiction. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But, for instance, once, especially one of my sons was a real perfectionist and afraid of getting something wrong. And as I told my boys when they were probably approaching the end of college, I said, look, kids, don't worry about making mistakes. Get over it. You know, we all do it. I've probably made more mistakes than you'll ever be able to in your life. And about a year later, I told them, say, guys, about those mistakes, I didn't mean to imply it was a contest.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, so it, the kids have good senses of humor, and will probably never read the book.
Well, you know, following, so, you know, but togetherness, I think, was an important thing to get across. And you've sort of implied that as we've been talking here, is following your dreams is another theme.
This is something I've probably done without even thinking about it. But I had had the opportunities to at least have the dreams, to let my mind go and assume that I could do things. I will probably always remember one young man I met on a farm that I went to. His father was very sick, and this kid, probably a senior in high school, was trying to hold things together. And he was working so hard, and he had so little opportunity to even pause for a moment and have a dream, to have a goal that he could set for himself in the future. His nose was right to the grindstone, and it always struck me that you have to keep one eye on the horizon, or at least occasionally think of what do you really want to do. And I know that it worked for me. I went back to graduate school when I was 42, and I discovered that learning is a lot harder then. Boy. But you've also picked up other things, but we just did it. Keeping a family of four, four children, fed, clothed, housed on a graduate student stipend wasn't easy, but I ended up having a chance to do something that I really loved.
Hmm. And that kind of comes through in the book. If I can read Doc, I think you, in some ways, certainly enjoyed your work as a veterinarian, but it was demanding in a way that you didn't always find agreeable.
When you start going on just a few hours sleep a night, I remember one time I was in a very busy practice. It was in Medford, Wisconsin at the time, and I was at midnight on Saturday, I finally had a chance to stop for dinner. And when I called in on a radio, which is what we used back then, I found out that I had an emergency call 45 miles north of Medford and then turn right. It was up in a place called Jump River. So it was at least 55 miles away from Medford, and I was 20 miles south of Medford. I didn't get to bed until 2:30 in the morning, and it turned out that it wasn't an emergency at all. It was just someone who was starting dairy farming. He didn't have much experience and misread some clinical signs. And there's no point in getting angry about it, so I just, all you can do is laugh about it. But it was a very demanding job, but I enjoyed it thoroughly.
And I think that story that you just told, kind of a version of that or a variation of that, turns up in your book.
It's a variation, but it's a very. Let me say that over the years, I had many calls during blizzards and, in really foul weather. And almost never was it really an emergency. Also, they were rarely our clients that called. But it wasn't just one. And at least back then, we just went on the call.
Yeah, and did the call. We had someone emailed in with a question. Why did you decide... Wondering about why you wrote a mystery novel. Were there some? sort of external forces that caused you to pick the, that particular genre.
Yeah, the when I was trying to they made it clear that we had to have it had to fit somehow with some genre, or no publisher would touch it. And the closest I could come to a description was a mystery of sorts. It was written before I started to worry about genre, and that was the closest it fit. This was a first book for me, and I would never do things the way I did with this. It probably took 8 or 9 years to put the book together. But that's when I was still, most of it was while I was still working.
So that's, I'm sure there are writers listening that said, well, all right, you said you did it wrong, or there were things you would never do again. What are those things that you would never do again?
Yeah, on the second book, I started out with a plot. Always a good idea. And I would also suggest that if anyone is thinking of writing, check with the extension department of the university that you're near. The University of Wisconsin has a great extension writing department with instructors that are actually authors who have work that is sold. I would, if I were to do it again, I would begin there, finding out what I'm up to.
Talking today with Gary Jones, who is the author of Doc's Codicil, about a family that has to solve a codicil left by a Wisconsin veterinarian when he died. And we also weave into that a book that the veterinarian wrote before he died that has some really pretty funny stories in it. Particularly one that's really stuck with me was the Christmas program that involved some camels. And yep. By the way, it was kind of fun. I'm trying to remember, was it Mabel? No, Gladys was the camel?
Yeah.
Gladys was a camel.
I wanted to pick a name that was as un-camel-like as you could get. And I finally got, I think my wife was complaining that some gladiolas had died out over winter, and took it from there.
Oh, well, the camel, and we get to read the camel's mind.
Yeah. After having worked, I really love cows. I enjoyed working with cows most of my life. I showed them, in 4-H and after. And I figured a camel's a ruminant. I did a little reading on, or a pseudo-ruminant to cut hairs, split hairs on it. But anyone who's worked with animals a lot can probably put, take a guess at what their mental processes are. And it was just an awful lot of fun to write.
Yeah, I was, as you were talking about cattle, I was remembering my own days as a kid on the farm. There was a kind of an order in the cattle kingdom. There was a lead cow.
Yeah.
And there were followers.
Yeah. And that is, I think it was in writing that description of the, it's the prologue for Doc's memoir, is a, he's describing trying to get some calves into a chute, and they don't want to go there, and the setup is not well designed. And anyone who's worked with that you'll see the cattle or the calves will seem to all at once, all of them want to go through the chute, and then they get stuck in it. And it happened. In my past, it happened over and over. So it was something to go from there. And the idea of a leader or several want-to-be leaders in the pack got me thinking about politics and just how people behave. And so I worked that in.
What were the main things? What did you take away from the? What did you learn most when writing your book?
In writing the book, I think the biggest thing was the reminder that, in looking back over my life, it has been ideas that other people thought were, wondered. You know, why do you want to do that? That, or were just thought outright crazy. When they worked, they were the best ones. And my graduate advisor, Gil Ward, had gone to him when I found that one of the major papers in my thesis was not well received by some. As a matter of fact, I submitted it to Infection and Immunity, and they had two reviewers review it. One said it's a great paper. The other one said there's no reason to publish this. It's, so they had to bring in a third one to break the tie. My advisor told me that if everybody agrees that you're right, there wasn't much point in doing it. And that's for science. And if for your life, let's say if starting a business or something, if everybody agrees, boy, that looks good, chances are there are already a whole bunch of people out there doing it. So it's the idea that strikes people as odd, as unusual or crazy. And if you carry it through and look very carefully, most of them, yeah, you'll dump. But the ones that are that you decide to go with that look promising can be very promising, can do very well.
And is that what you want people to take away from the book?
That's one of the things I'd like. Yeah, it is. How do you handle ideas? Most of our ideas really are very good. I give as an example, when I got the butter in the vacuum cleaner, I had just vacuumed the floor in the kitchen, and I looked around, and there were crumbs all over on the counters. I had gotten my wife a bread-making machine for Christmas, and the kids really liked the fresh bread in the morning. And I looked at the vacuum cleaner and thought, well, I'll just, I thought that was a pretty good idea until I reached behind a box of Cheerios that somebody had left out, and it was in the summer, and it was hot, and there was also a stick of butter left out there, and you know how sticks of butter get sort of go through. So it was just like on Grease, and I pulled the wand back toward me, and not all ideas are good.
What are you working on right now, Gary?
Actually, the next book, it's already due in May. I did name it originally Coronavirus, but my editor talked me into picking a name that was a little less perhaps threatening for people. The title will be A Jerk, A Jihad, and A Virus. And it starts with the idea that, and this is true, that one of the most common viruses in cattle is bovine coronavirus. It's very difficult to find a group of calves that don't have it. And it's only really deadly in neonates. Older calves, get over it. No problem. You didn't even know they had it. That is the closest relative, or it is one of the very close relatives to the SARS virus, which is also a coronavirus. And so I just took it from there. The difficult thing was I find it almost impossible to write something that is tense, has, you know, the typical thriller.
Yeah.
So I started out trying to write a pandemic story, and I ended up with a comedy.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing what that book's going to be about. Gary, thank you in the meantime for talking with us today about your book, your first book, Doc's Codicil. And Gary, again, as I said, was a practiced medicine, bovine medicine in rural Wisconsin for 19 years. Then the rest of his career spent after he got a PhD in microbiology is research and development on veterinary vaccines. And it all led to this mystery, which is also parts comedy as well, Doc's Codicil. Gary Jones, our guest today. Coming up next, we're going to talk about giving. How do you give? What do you give? What is philanthropy to you? Our next author is a writer who talks and whose book is titled Simple Giving, Easy Ways to Give Every Day. Do you give every day? We'll talk about that next with our next guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.